Our guest today is Ian Bernstein, who is co-founder of a company called Orbotics that produces a robotic ball called the Sphero. And we're going to talk today about Ian's background and about the company and about the ball. And just to disclose, Orbotics is a sponsor of the Plutopia event at South by Southwest on March 14th. And we hope to see the Sphero in action there. And this is how we discovered Sphero and how we discovered Ian. And we're really excited to have a chance to have a conversation with you today, Ian.
Yeah, same here.
So how long have you been into robotics? Is this something you started really early on?
Well, it sounds like same as you. I just, as far back as I remember, I was always pulling apart radios and cassette players and pulling out the motors and different components and trying to figure out how they worked. And I actually started homeschooling when I was in fourth grade. And when I was, my dad was a classical guitarist, and he kind of realized that I was interested in like pulling all this stuff apart and started trading guitar lessons for this guy teaching me about electronics. And we've been doing that about 6 months, and he showed me this flyer for these Beam Robotics games in 95, and my dad and I decided to check it out the first day and maybe stop by for a couple hours and see how it was. And they ended up having these workshops, and I was just totally hooked. We ended up going all, I think, 3 or 4 days of the whole competition, and I was just there from super early in the morning till late at night just working on with everybody. And they had these robotics kits, and I was totally hooked. So
what was it about robotics that turned you on so much?
I don't know. I think it's just, I like the problem-solving aspect of it. Like, I don't know. When I started, it was this Beam Robotics, which is all about analog robotics, non-computer-based, and just hacking, you know, taking a cassette player, taking the motor out, and using that component or pulling different electronics apart and using all these different components. So it was just so fun to just sort of hack all these different devices and see what I could pull out from them and what sort of robot I could make from these components. So it was...
What was the first project you can recall that where you really got it together and it really worked well?
Well, during the robotics games, they had this workshop, and there was a bunch of people helping out that were robotics experts. And the first robot I built, I think, was this solar-powered, it's called a photopopper. So there's a couple solar panels on it and a couple motors, and it slowly builds up a charge and moves in these small increments. And eventually, over the course of a day, this little photopopper will slowly move towards light. So if you put it in the middle of your room, at the end of the day, it'll be over by your window.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so just real basic stuff, and kind of got more complicated from there. I mean, just kept building.
Well, you're based in Colorado. Have you lived there all along?
No, I grew up in northern New Mexico in a very rural town. Lived there until I went to college. I went to New Mexico Tech for a few years, and then I eventually transferred up to Colorado State in Fort Collins, Colorado.
So New Mexico and rural New Mexico and Colorado are not generally thought of as hotbeds of robotics. Is there a lot actually happening there? What makes it kind of a fertile ground for the kind of thing that you're doing?
Well, so the guy who started this Beam Robotics, Mark Tilden, was a researcher at Los Alamos National Laboratory. So there's actually, with Sandia Labs and Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, there's actually quite a bit of technology. And then, of course, Boulder, there's tons of tech companies around here. We got HP, Intel, AMD, all the big companies.
How about robotics specifically, though? Are there other robotics companies there besides Orbotics?
There's a couple smaller companies. There's a really cool company actually called Mod Robotics here in Boulder. They're making these little cubes that snap together with magnets, So they're like building blocks, and there's different cubes. Some have motors on them, some have lights and switches, and you kind of snap all these cubes together and you get a robot very quickly that does actually really cool stuff. And then there's, I worked, before I started this company, I worked at a company called Road and Arrows Robotics, and they do like humanoid robots and things like that. And a couple other smaller ones, nothing big that I know of.
You mentioned the humanoid robots. We all sort of have in our heads, you know, the idea of Robbie the Robot or the robot on Lost in Space and so forth, the more humanoid forms. Have you ever attempted to build one of those, or are you interested in humanoid robots that much?
Definitely. They are very difficult, though. Just the programming aspect of a humanoid robot is extremely complicated, all the different ligaments. And you notice when you look up videos online of humanoid robots, they fall over a lot.
I always thought it was kind of a constraining thing to try to think of the humanoid form, like we're being kind of anthropocentric and maybe missing opportunities if we try to go with a design that is a replica of the human design.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the Honda Azumo robot is getting crazy lifelike. It's pretty scary to watch, actually.
Is the shape of your robot a sphere? Did that come about just because of those limitations of the humanoids? Of, you know, it's a little harder for a sphere to fall over.
Kind of. We really like the sphere just because it's so simple. It's one of the most basic shapes, and it's one of the most basic toys or gaming devices that's been around forever. I mean, when we did our Techstars pitch last summer, we looked to see what the first ball was, and it, so it's such a simple shape, but the electronics and the firmware inside to control it is actually insanely difficult. but yeah, I mean, it's awesome that a ball can't fall over, which makes it nice mechanically. It's very simple, but yet so complex.
Where did you get the idea to create a device that was controlled by a phone specifically?
So I think it was, just one night I was working at Road and Arrows, and I thought it'd just be cool to control these robots with my phone. So I looked online, and there wasn't really a simple way to control your project with your phone. So I thought, well, I can make this easy for hobbyists. And it started out, that was kind of the bootstrapping idea, that we could, that I could build this board that any sort of hobbyist could just buy and plug into their own project and have a very simple interface on the phone that they could sort of drag buttons into and sliders and sort of create their own little custom interface and just make their own projects phone controlled. And I brought on my co-founder, Adam Wilson, and the two of us applied to Techstars and a couple of these other seed incubators. And through the applications to these seed incubators, we realized that the possibilities for this technology could be far more than just hobbyist market. Nobody was really doing this well in the consumer space either. So that's how we ended up getting into Techstars, is we just wanted to control things with our phones.
And he's the software developer and you're the hardware developer, right?
Yep, exactly. So we started out, I was doing business and hardware, and he was doing all the mobile software.
You know, it strikes me that the rolling ball controller can be used to control a lot of other objects. Have you been looking at other things to control with this interface?
Definitely. So to get into Techstars, we initially sent them an email, and they said, well, we don't do hardware companies. So we just started bombarding them with videos of things that we were controlling. So totally like terrible videos, but we set it up so I could open my garage door. I put a remote starter in my car and started it, unlocked the doors. What else? Oh, we controlled lights. We had like a three-way switch inset into the wall. So you could turn the light on and off with your switch, or you could just pull out your phone and turn the light on and off. We controlled a toy tank. And Adam actually had this, it was like a 200-pound robot that he was working on. And we're about to like try to control that with the phone too. Probably would have
this
been
sounds good. This sounds very Plutopian. You know, the one of the first projects we did as Plutopia was about the do-it-yourself home of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things about it was that the home would be configurable and controllable in just the way that you're talking about. I mean, I think there's a huge opportunity there and a real possibility that all kinds of controls will be created for what people may call smart homes, but really what's smart is the user controlling the home.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So is there a really clean division between you doing the hardware and Adam doing the software, or do you guys kind of blur together sometimes in that kind, in the development of something like the ball?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like it was definitely a perfect team between Adam and I, just because he's done a lot of robotic stuff too. So he doesn't have the background in the hardware side, but he knows enough to be able to do it. And I have enough in the software end that I can look at his code and kind of work through stuff, but I'm definitely don't have nearly the experience there as well. So it was definitely, we have our specialties, but it overlapped enough that we could definitely help each other out on both sides. And it was the perfect team.
Well, you've opened the API to outside developers. What kind of response have you had so far?
It's been great. So over TechStars, we had a couple hackathon weekends where it was really scary, the first one. I mean, nobody had looked at our code, and we just sent out some emails and had, I think, 15 developers that we didn't know any of them come in. And within literally like 3 hours, we had people driving. We started out with this rover, and we had people driving the rover around with their own apps, and they were like, it was awesome. Like the first guy that got it to work was like jumped out of his seat and so excited. So we use the hackathons to get feedback from people and improve the API, and it's definitely progressed a lot since then. And we're excited to have another hackathon soon with the balls, now that we have hardware to work with.
How many hackathons have you had?
I think it's been 3.
Were they all in Colorado?
Yeah, so far.
I was just thinking that might be something cool to do at South by Southwest. It might be late for that, but
yeah.
It'd be very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know about this year, but definitely, I mean, that'd be awesome to do next year for sure. We'd have tons of balls, and that'd be
so
fun.
The ball is just ready to launch as a consumer product. Is that correct?
Yep. So it'll be out late this year. So holidays. So right now we're just working on the final molds and all the electronics and things like that. So that's what I was working on this morning, just finalizing all the electronics so we can start ordering parts and get these things produced.
Well, you know, the open development of apps for a product such as yours, can be controversial at times. You know, some other companies have been very restrictive on what kind of apps they allow. And, you know, there's always a possibility of someone creating something highly inappropriate or controversial that you really may not want your product associated with. Has that been given any thought as to whether there's any restriction on a Sphero app?
A little bit. So, I mean, it depends on the platform. So, for instance, Apple, of course, we get the option to pre-screen any developers. So, basically, any developer that wants to develop for Sphero, we have to whitelist them for Apple. Once they're whitelisted, they would have to go through the same app procedure. So, I assume Apple would kind of clean any of those bad ones out. And we'll also have some sort of limits to what people can build. I don't know. We'll have some sort of app policy. Probably definitely not as stringent as Apple, but maybe not quite as open as Android.
we had a big conversation recently with somebody at National Instruments, who, which of course is a pretty big hardware company here based in Austin. And we were talking to him about some of his work with K-12. He had done some like mentoring in K-12 classes and that sort of thing, kind of working with really young engineers. Have you thought about working with younger people, people who are just kind of like you were when you were younger, just getting into it, and maybe even bringing their ideas into the mix for the design of the ball and the design of the software?
Definitely. Actually, kind of funny, we were just talking about this yesterday, about starting kind of a group that we could bring in maybe once a month of kids, and they could come like check out Sphero and offer suggestions, and we'd offer prizes for like suggestions that we actually use. And yeah, absolutely. And some of the, one of the apps we want to work on is, I don't know if you're familiar with Lego Mindstorms.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's, in fact, that's one of the things we were talking to the guy, Hunter Smith is the name of the guy at National Instruments. He's their K-12 product marketing engineer.
Cool.
And, they do a lot of work with Lego Mindstorms too.
Cool.
It seems like a really great way to bring kids into the mix and, you know, sort of help incubate their ideas. And at the same time, you know, you're kind of watching the kinds of ideas they're having and can especially if you're building an open system, give them an opportunity to sort of hack around it.
Sounds like an excellent opportunity for quality assurance testing too. There's nothing like a kid to, you know, break any system or any toy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. And we definitely like, yeah, sometimes like over the summer, if you look on our blog, we took the very beginnings of Sphere out on Pearl Street here in downtown Boulder, and just gave our phone to the little kids, and have some pictures of kids like driving the very, very first prototypes just to see how they reacted to it. And we definitely take feedback from that, and we found that, for instance, like kids like to follow the ball around. So adults usually will stand in one place and kind of drive it around, but kids like to run around and kind of like follow it as it's driving. So that definitely has influenced the way that we're going to be doing our basic driving app.
How big is the ball?
So it's about like a baseball size.
Ah.
So.
What kind of range?
I was wondering if you snow tested it.
Mm-hmm. not yet, but it will be sealed. So we definitely want to see what happens when we throw it in a lake or a bathtub or something. So if it works in there, it should work with snow.
What's the effective operating range?
We get about, on the Bluetooth we're using now, we get about 50 feet. So plenty for an object this size.
Why did you choose Bluetooth?
So that was definitely an important decision at the beginning. So all the robots I had worked with, they all used Wi-Fi. And the problem was is just getting them configured on your network. It was such a pain. You'd have to, if your network was protected, you had to somehow log into the robot wired, because, and then configure the wireless settings to your network and do all that stuff. And it was just a huge pain. I've seen there was a couple Wi-Fi products that were controlled from your iPhone, and it just seemed cumbersome. Like every time you wanted to use it, you have to go into your settings, like change your Wi-Fi network. Go back to your app, and then you lose your internet connectivity. And when you want to get your internet back, you have to go back to your internet settings, Wi-Fi settings, change your network. So it was just cumbersome. So I wanted Bluetooth. I wanted something super simple that it's just a one-time pairing, like you would a headset, and then you're done. You just turn the whatever the device is on, like Sphero. Sphero can automatically connect to your phone. And then you just open the app and you're done. It's just not that cumbersome process.
I would imagine that a Wi-Fi connection, you know, there's always, you know, the possibility of someone hacking your Sphero and taking it off somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
Which platforms are you working with? Are you working with iPhone and Android both, or any other?
Yep. So we're launching with both iPhone and Android, and definitely definitely our API is open enough that a developer could port it to whatever platform they wanted. I'd like to make a PC interface too. I thought it'd be cool if the ball, if Sphero is sitting in its charger on your desk, you could, your laptop, say, could push data to it. So, you know, you look over in the morning and the ball is blue, it means it's going to rain that day, or it's red, it's going to be hot out, or that way you're not sucking power from your phone, but say your PC could push data to it as well, or drive it, or you could even have games on your laptop.
I just actually had an interesting thought. We have a robot soccer team here in Austin. It's the Robot Dogs, you know, at the University of Texas,
yeah,
that play soccer. If they use Sphero as their ball, as their soccer ball, that could make for a very interesting variation on the game of soccer.
Yeah.
Where the ball is actually a player.
That'd be cool. We've got a lot of like golfers like want us to put it in a golf size ball, so they could roll it as their buddies trying to putt. You could kind of steer it away from the hole.
Yeah, are you familiar with the robot group here in Austin?
No, actually.
It's kind of an arts group, really, but they do robotics as art. There are a bunch of engineers who are just love to hack hardware, basically, and they build all sorts of cool things.
That's awesome.
I'm sure they'll be around. Are you actually coming to South by Southwest yourself?
I am, actually. Yeah, definitely. Are they going to have stuff set up?
We're going to have, we know of at least one member of the robot group who will be at the Plutopia event, and we'll be interviewing him later this week. His name is Marvin Niebuhr. He comes in with his alter ego, Professor Conrad, and his giant brain. He has a giant brain that he's been working on for, I don't know, several years now. It was a highlight of last year's Plutopia.
Awesome. Well, I'd love to check that out. I'm definitely into electronic art stuff. I built these little solar-powered robotic butterflies when I was younger.
Cool. You should bring those with you.
I should. Yeah, I definitely like, I love the art aspect. I'm definitely into both the engineering and the art, so I'd love to see what they have.
I'm not sure that the giant brain is an actually completely 100% functional brain, but then most aren't, so we're okay. So we wondered, and this may be a little bit out of your realm within the company, but are you aware, other than your blog, are there other ways that you guys are using social media to get the word out about Sphero and connect with people?
Well, definitely our blog, Facebook, and Twitter. And we're trying to get onto YouTube. We've been talking about doing some maybe like a weekly video or something of Sphero in action, or doing something cool, or taking it out on the street and have people play with it. So I think video is definitely one of the things we want to move to.
Could you embed a video camera in Sphero?
We've had a lot of people ask us that. We could. We're going to hold off right now just because, so probably the main, well, two main reasons. One is cost, and two is we want the shell of Sphero not to be transparent, and it would have to be transparent if you put a camera inside. And we found that people just, it seems a lot cooler when you can't really see how it works, I guess.
Yeah.
It's sort of a mystery. So.
Well, back to the question of social media, it's sort of connecting that or relating that to your intention to be open and have other people write applications and that sort of thing. Have you thought about forming communities of people who like to hack Sphero?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Adam and I as the founders, we're definitely the hacker type. And we definitely love, I seriously don't think I own it, either of us own a device that we haven't modded or hacked in some way. So that is definitely something that we want for Sphero. Just this whole back-end community of people taking their Sphero homes and doing stuff that voids their warranty on Sphero.
During your hackathons, has anyone come up with something that really surprised you, that was unexpected?
I mean, I guess the level of our API at the times that we've had these hackathons wasn't sophisticated enough that you could do something too crazy, but like the last hackathon, I never would have thought of it, but somebody set up basically a server on their phone so that you could drive Sphero from his PC. So his PC would go like send commands from the keys over the internet to his phone, which then acted as a proxy, which would then send commands over Bluetooth to Sphero. And that was pretty cool. Another one, just somebody made an app that our very first hackathon, somebody just made an app that you could drive the rover around and record its motions and then drive it back to the start, and then it stop and then play, and it would replay that motion. It was actually very accurate. So just cool little things. I don't know. I'm looking forward to, I mean, these are just weekend hackathons, so I'm really looking forward to when people have this for weeks or months, what they come up with.
You took Sphero to CES?
Yep. Yeah.
How did people respond to it there?
It was much better than we expected. I mean, it was just a constant crowd. We thought we would be able to kind of, we took all seven of us at our company at the time, and we kind of thought we'd be able to go in shifts and do half days, and ended up being all seven of us all day, all 4 days of CES, just nonstop people coming by, just tons of media stopping by, and it was just crazy.
Sounds like a blast.
Yeah, we weren't sure, because I mean we obviously had developed the algorithms for Sphero, so we know how to drive it just because we really understand it. But it was really the first time that we had other people trying to roll Sphero around using our app, and we were surprised at how well people picked it up. I mean, there was a few people that didn't sort of get it right away, but other people were just in 10 seconds were just driving it around like a pro. So
I thought it was funny that Gizmodo said that Sphero was, that we need Sphero because today's kids are too lazy to actually throw, bounce, play, or even pick up a physical ball.
Yep. Well, you can kind of roll it back to you, so you can kind of relate. But it is cool, like the physical aspect of it, that people can create mazes and drag pillows around and get back into this real life.
Yeah, I mean, it feels sort of like a real killer app kind of thing, the sort of thing that could be just broadly adopted because it's the applications are so many and so flexible.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the general public seems to have really fallen in love with it from things I've read. How about other technology companies? Have you had people, you know, express an interest, from other companies?
Yeah, definitely. Just for various things in different parts of the technology, or definitely. I can't really talk about them, but.
Yeah, I know you can't talk about specific things, but do you plan to pursue partnerships with other technology companies to market the API?
Definitely. I mean, we're definitely open to that idea. We'd like to. I mean, right now we're 100% focused on getting a very high quality product out, but we're definitely open if the right opportunity came along. We would definitely be interested in working with another company.
I was just wondering if you considered building larger versions of the Sphero.
I definitely want to. Absolutely. Were they like kind of a cool like gladiator ball that you could actually, I don't know, just take to shows or something? That would be awesome. Just have like giant like 3-foot spheros that are just like BattleBot size.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, now that would make an interesting BattleBot, you know, equip it with weapons. And of course, that might get you in trouble with the product safety people.
Yeah, probably not as a product, but just kind of a fun project would be awesome.
Well, Ian, we really want to thank you for joining us today. This has been a great conversation. Do you have anything else that you want to add about Sphero or about South by Southwest?
Well, definitely come see us at South by Southwest. So Sphero comes out later this year.
And just from our end, we'll mention that Sphero will be rolling around Plutopia 2011 on March 14th. And we're looking forward to taking the opportunity to play with it ourselves.
You can learn more about Sphero by going to orbotics.com or gospiro.com. With John Lebkowski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.